Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 3rd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Scott Harms, let's start with you this afternoon. What's on your list of items we should discuss for the day?
Well, we know the markets have been very quiet, quietly lower, and so we're just trying to identify what kind of catalyst we may have that can break these markets out of the doldrums and perhaps create a real rally to prices as we move forward closer to planting.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I guess a couple of things, Todd. I wouldn't mind having a little discussion on the acres and what people are expecting looking at the acres report at the end of the month. But probably more importantly, just kind of how do we approach this season from a marketing and crop insurance standpoint, and where, how does all that fit together, and what kind of a approach should we be looking at here going into the spring?
And finally, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting.
I guess I'd throw in the hat, are the outside markets telling us anything that may help stir up a rally over in the agricultural commodity sector?
Okay, let's start with you, Bill, on the crop insurance. Can you go through the numbers? Because Strategic Farm Marketing, of course, does sell crop insurance. Can you go through the numbers as they finished up the month of February and what you're telling producers at this point?
Yeah, we ended up with 386 for the February average on the December corn. Volatility level of about 17, which is low, and that affects the rate some. So just to put in perspective, a 200 APH farmer, 85% coverage, would be covering about $656 of coverage. On soybeans, we were at 885 for the November futures during the month of February, 12% volatility, which is about as low as I can remember for a while. And that gives a 60 bushel APH producer at 85%. About $451 worth of coverage. We're seeing the rates. Rates are actually a little bit higher, but the overall cost per acre is down because of the lower volatility and, of course, the lower prices. We feel like this is just the first, prong of a three-prong marketing plan. It gives you some support underneath the market. You have to understand where it fits in, and I always look at it. If I'm taking an 85% coverage, for example, my first step is, if I haven't already done it, is to try to get that uninsured bushels at 15%. What level do I want to start selling that at? So that's kind of where we're at on the crop insurance side of things.
A couple of quick notes. I know that you referred to it as a percentage of 12% for soybeans on the volatility and 17 on the corn. When you listen to Gary Schnitke, if you've listened on the air, you've heard him say 1.7 and 1.2. It doesn't really matter. It's just that they are the same. They're just said differently. But both are very low volatilities, and Gary has said and agrees with what you said here, which is if you were at 85%, stay at 85%. But he says the same for whatever you happen to be at. If it was 75 or 80 or 85, that's probably where producers ought to end up. How much cheaper really is it this year than it has been in the previous years?
Well, most of my experiences with Central Illinois, it's really kind of interesting, because probably if you insured the same exact number that you were insuring last year, it would probably be, like on corn, a couple bucks cheaper, maybe beans an acre, I'm saying, and maybe on beans $2 to $3 an acre cheaper. But what I'm seeing is, with some of the good yields that we've got in here with the 2014 and 2012 crops, you know, APHs have gone up pretty substantially, and the dollar amounts are actually holding a little bit better than I expected them to, because we do have those bushels, especially on a rotated farm where the farmer didn't have the advantage of the 2014 yields in his APH last year, but he will have this year because it's, you know, the year that the farm is in corn. So,
have you heard many questions about other products in the crop insurance line besides the RPs at this point? For instance, area revenue product, and maybe even the whole farm product, which generally is reserved, I think, for producers who have a really diverse product line, much wider than most producers would have in certainly Illinois or even across a lot of the Midwest.
Yeah, we certainly had a lot of interest in the whole farm product, like you say, in those areas where they have at least three commodities. It's got the most interest in those areas because they can do an 85% coverage level on that at a really reasonable cost. Other products, as far as the county products, the area protection is county by county. Some counties just tend to be more competitive with the individual product and points more towards the county products in some counties, and others it doesn't seem quite as attractive. So that kind of varies by location. We do have some supplemental type products where you can look at different months, and if those months would happen to average above the February, you could use that higher price to lay on top of your multi-peril insurance. And we're seeing some interest in that, although you know, not an extreme amount of interest.
Dan, help me out on this one. You were with me on Tuesday evening at Sherman at the Farm Credit Illinois building, and Gary Schnitke was going through this. Logan County, this would be near Springfield, so it's right in the middle of the state, and Sangamon County are next to each other. Logan County, which also happens to have the highest cash rents in the nation, they've carried that more years than not, was on the area revenue product program was what? I think $23 an acre, if I remember right. And Sangamon County, Dan, 65 or 60-something. But they were pretty wide differences. So I guess the point being, check your counties, right? Okay, so let's move on. Anybody, either Scott or Dan, do you have questions about crop insurance that you want to ask Bill? Because this might be a good point to do that.
I would ask, is there any switching of acres or leaning one way or the other based upon the prices? Is there any of that moving on? And then
I would say that's pretty neutral this year. I don't see a lot of change. In fact, it's kind of interesting, as I've been going around seeing clients, there's really some of both, and it depends on, I think, last year's yields on beans, to be quite honest with you. I've had some guys say they may go with a few more acres of corn because, you know, it compares a lot better economically, and I've also seen in some areas where they're looking at the beans maybe being the way to go. So I don't think there's a big consensus there, Dan, as far as I can see, and that probably varies. Again, you know, I cover a pretty wide swath of Illinois and into Missouri a little bit, but, you know, I'm kind of limited to those areas, and it may be different in some of the other areas.
USDA sort of set the stage for the acreage debate when it came out with its forum numbers last week, up to by 2 million acres corn across the United States to 90 million, dropped 200,000 for the soybeans. Did this make much of a difference, Scott, in your thought about what might come out at the end of the month for acreage?
No, not necessarily. I think that those are our initial baseline numbers to work with. I think that the 2 million acre increase in corn is probably a little rich. I think it'll come in shy of that. And so I think the biggest input, the biggest concern going forward is, you know, not so much the acreage, but what kind of inputs we are going to end up putting on this crop and what kind of cost-cutting measures are going to be taking place that could eventually put on some sort of a yield drag. But Yeah, these are initial numbers. I think that they'll certainly change in going into the March numbers and going into the June numbers. But the market had a mild reaction to it. But I think we're in that discovery mode. But I think the 2 million acre increase in corn was a little on the high side in our mind.
Dan, any reason to believe that the marginal acreage will go back into CRP if it possibly can? I don't know that there's not that much available room in CRP, frankly, for it.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I doubt it. I think you may see something change next year, but I don't think this year it'll have much of an impact, at least at this point anyway, because everybody had good yields last year. So they'll see what they can produce. You got to keep in mind a lot of the marginal acres are really low-cost acres too, that, you know, they're not expensive acres or expensive cash rent acres. So if they happen to have good weather, they've got a low cost of production. And I think that's one thing visiting with people around different corners of the Corn Belt is, you know, the western areas have a cheaper cost of production than the eastern Corn Belt farmers because they don't have land costs as high. And, you know, with the good weather pattern that we've had the past couple of years, they've actually ended up being a little better probably financially than maybe some of the eastern Corn Belt farmers, which you would think would be land rich and high yields.
Bill Scott wanted to talk a little bit about the catalyst that could break these doldrums. And I'm wondering, given, for instance, this week FC Stone and Informa both came out with larger numbers for total production out of South America, will we see anything in the next couple of weeks that might really change the marketplace and how it's viewing what we're looking at going forward?
Boy, I'll tell you, it's hard to see anything right now. I think that somebody mentioned the weather before, and I think that definitely is something that the trade's watching very close. We have the managed money funds, you know, pretty short going into the spring here, which is a little bit unusual. Maybe if we could get some kind of a spark that would get them a little nervous, that might be something that could spark a rally. But I guess from our standpoint, we're looking at it, you know, if you look at the next 45 to 60 days, it's hard to see a lot out there. I think myself, in the long run, the economy and getting some confidence in our economy, both globally and U.S., is probably one of the things that has most potential to help prices, but I'm not sure I see the reason that that's going to change overnight here either.
I just attack on what Bill said. You know, the fund short position is pretty sizable for this time of year. Wheat, it's a record short. Meal, it's a record short. Corn and beans, sizable short position. We've had some reasonable rallies actually the last 2 years in the month of March. As far as a catalyst goes, it is hard to see in when you look specifically at the corn and soybean markets because the demand has just been rather tepid, and we know that the world and U.S. supplies are pretty heavy. But you know, perhaps the first real rally happens, you know, in the wheat market. You know, we've got some dry conditions in the Southwest. We've got some warmer temperatures coming in. Perhaps we get that the grow point on some of these wheat acres. To the point where it could be more vulnerable than in past years to a late March, early April frost scenario. Again, that's not something that's going to change the supply, fundamental supply picture dramatically unless it's a massive situation. But it could very well force these funds, again, with the funds short a record amount of wheat going into the week, it could force these people up to the sidelines. And then we know that once you get you break the downtrend, you get these trend-following funds chasing the market higher. Another area that we're watching very closely is soybean oil market. We know that the problems they've had in the Malaysian oil market and the Indonesian oil market, that that's an area where could be a catalyst to the upside for the soy complex. So those are two areas. We're not necessarily looking at the corn and soybeans for our catalyst, but it might come in some of these outside markets or side markets that just forces these funds to the sidelines as we go into the growing season.
Dan, your thoughts on fundamental changes in the marketplace or a catalyst that could move it?
Well, it's going to, you know, weather is going to be the key, I think, and we're just too early. I think, you know, 30 days from now, then weather will become more important. I'm a sunspot guy, so I guess I'll get everybody talking about sunspots this week. And sunspot activity is really very quiet. And in quiet activity like what we're in, you have a tendency to have a cooler, drier type weather pattern, and it increases chances for late freezes and early freezes. So as Scott mentioned, the wheat crop is out of dormancy, and that would be something that might stir up a wheat market rally. And then that could spill on over into corn and soybeans. The other thing is, at least the way I view the technical picture of the dollar, I think the dollar is very vulnerable in here to a much more meaningful correction to the downside after basically tracking sideways here for the last year and a half or so inside that range. I think we're going to bust to the downside of that range. I'll view it as more of a distribution type top. So I think that could maybe spark some short covering like Scott has mentioned. But those are about the only two things that I see at the moment, because I suppose the South American crop is not in the bin yet, and it's not complete. The growing season isn't complete yet, so we may have some late weather issues maybe in South America, but at least for right now, everybody's, you know, on the big crop bandwagon.
So can you take me through the technical reasons why you think the dollar will break? What is it that you see there?
Well, what I see is a price divergence with a couple of the technical indicators. And while the dollar made a higher high on the recent run-up, the technical indicator did not make a higher high. It actually fell below the high of the other high that the dollar made, you know, like a year ago, year and a half ago. So that is what I call as a bearish setup or bearish divergence pattern. And so on a monthly chart, this is on a monthly chart, so it indicates to me that you should be watchful for that. I'd say it's only about a 60% or 65% probability, but the chart pattern is set up for a break down underneath. I don't have a chart in front of me, but the recent low we had, I think, maybe down around 94 or 95, so I do think we've been in this 98, 99 area that I do think the dollar is vulnerable to a breakdown into the low 90s. Now, fundamentally, what triggers that, I don't know. I do know that Iran now is asking to be paid in euros. Now, you know, crude oil is still priced in dollars, but they want to be paid in euros. So if you buy oil from Iran, you got to take your dollars and sell them and buy euros with them to pay Iran. And that's something to kind of watch. If you get any of the other foreign countries start doing that, that could be something that might trigger a break in the dollar.
Any reason to think the other outside markets, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, has shown some strength that this is what's happening there, that they're seeing the dollar look like it's going to get strong or look like it's going to get weaker?
I'm not much of an equity guy, but I guess we did make a two-month high today on the at least the indexes. But I think there's a lot of worry about this negative interest rate that's happening around the world, and of course the U.S. Fed talked about negative interest rate. I think a negative interest rate could really, it's starting to play havoc in the other economies, and I think it would really play havoc in the U.S. economy if if our Fed would decide to move in that direction.
Scott, you make your home between Oakland and Chicago, depending on which office that is. In Chicago, do the traders feel as if there is enough premium built into this marketplace this early in the season for commodities like corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Well, it appears just the way it's traded in the last couple weeks, it seems that there is a relative equilibrium going on right now where, for now, there's no question there's weather premium built in. And that will be taken out over time if there is no weather event. There's not a lot of extra weather premium built in, so we are certainly vulnerable to a price correction on the way up. But, you know, this market seems to have found a very complacent, very comfortable level. I do think that will change as we get closer and closer and we start talking more about corn and soybean fundamentals in the second half of the month and focus more on weather patterns as we get into April. I think there's a real chance that we'll start to add in a little weather premium going forward.
Well, I guess I'm not sure that I see weather premium build into the market. In fact, I think right now that the trade is pretty lackadaisical about the fact that we can just go out here and, you know, raise 168 bushel corn, for example, and good bean yields. We have had three really good years in the corn production side of things and soybeans, and I think we're just kind of maybe taking a little bit for granted. So I think we probably don't have as much weather premium as what we typically have for this time of the year going into the spring. But, you know, time will tell whether we need it or not.
Dan, you have a view on this one?
Well, technically, we're down against the lows. I mean, beans actually, I think, took out their fall low on the cash market. And corn is, you know, on futures-wise anyway, is down right against that January low. I think we've got like an August low or an October low. But the scary part here is that we've been tracking sideways and we're at the bottom of that range. Now, if something comes along and we break to the downside of that range, then that would open up the gates for another leg down technically, which could, you know, be 20 cents or more in corn and, you know, could be, you know, 50 to 60 cents more down risk on beans. So I can only say that from a technical point of view is that we need to hold in here. Now, we held today and we're set up maybe for a higher weekly finish in wheat, maybe in beans. Corn has to gain a little bit on Friday. And then if we could get some technical follow through, maybe we can pull ourselves off the bottom end of this range and get back into the mid-range territory, which would be more neutral. But if we can't do that and we break to the downside, I think it would be, you know, quite interesting to see what happens because it would kick in more technical selling, long liquidation, whatever. But that would be the only thing that I would have to say. And I think that what would trigger something like that, if we have an early break to the growing season, planting season, and, you know, we are going to be 60 next Tuesday, and we usually have snowstorms, I think, on...
We've had 60 before, but, yeah, snowstorms more often for the old ag outlook than
but,
60 years.
You know, early Easter, we got one of the earlier Easters we have, and the old saying, early Easter, early spring. And if farmers start working the fields, out in the fields, it'll be very, very hard to hold this market. I just, basis levels could probably improve because the end users don't have any real coverage, and they would have to probably bid up the basis, try to pull inventory into the pipeline if you have a big break in futures. But that would be my only worry, that if farmers start planting corn, start getting in early, because we've had a couple years of wet weather patterns delaying plantings, and it may be again this year. At least the current forecast indicates that the Ohio River Valley is going to get some pretty good rains in the southern growing region of Mississippi and Arkansas and Tennessee. So, but that would be something that I would say that would probably maybe do something like that.
Dan, what do your March seasonals tell you as we go through the month of March here?
Well, my cycles that I watch, corn and soybeans are right in the window here to post a major low or have a meaningful turn to the upside. Corn has a little longer cycle, so my guess would be that wheat and corn would be, or wheat and soybeans would be the leader to watch them first. And then corn will come later. But I've been kind of, from my cycle point of view, I've been looking at basically April 1 plus or minus, 15 days or 20 days in here. So we are in a window here, I think, to have some intermediate cycle turns to the upside. So it kind of tells me something's going to happen. Either maybe the report is going to surprise us, but it's kind of hard to see how the report will surprise us significantly anyway. But maybe something will happen elsewhere around the world or something. But it does. I think we're in the window for some bullish news as we go into April and May. Let's put it that way. But we may have to wait till middle April to get it. We may stay bearish here for, into mid-April or so.
Well, I was just going to add one thing, and I think I saw today some talk that, as hog producers, given the strength in the hog market, the hog producers are able to lock in, profitable margins through the year of 2016 at these times. Cattle margins have improved over the last month or so. So perhaps, looking 30 days out, and it seems like we talk about this a lot every time we get close to a stocks report, we talk about perhaps a surprise in the feed usage number. But, given the price of meal and price of corn, certainly it would seem that, perhaps disappearance in that area could be something that could provide a catalyst even in the face of the acreage data coming out the same day.
Okay, Scott, I'd like you to go through, since probably the primary thing that producers will be doing for at least the new crop is crop insurance. Is there anything else that they should do for it? And then how about for old crop corn and soybeans?
Well, I mean, Bill mentioned earlier, focus on the part of your crop, the 15%, 15-20% of your crop that you don't have covered by insurance. That should be your initial objective. Sit down now while these quiet markets are quiet, and before you get busy in the field, and identify your targets, because if indeed it becomes a short covering rally led by funds, it can be rather acute, and it may only last for a week or so. We saw that happen last summer. I'm not suggesting a rally similar to that, but it didn't last very long, so it's important to sit down now and set your targets before it becomes emotional and the market becomes emotional. It's a very quiet time, a good time to do that. As far as old crop, I think in our Oakland facility, there's definitely been an increase in sales over the last week. Most of it's, of storage of corn sold, corn that was in storage, and no one really wants to sell it. They're selling it because they're either throwing it in the towel or they're selling it because they needed to pay some bills on March 1st. And I guess what I would suggest, I think it's important that there is an opportunity to re-own in options. Option volatilities are real low, so I think that opportunity exists. If you're not willing to step in and own it here, identify some kind of trigger in the market from a technical perspective that would trigger that action. So if we should say, for instance, December corn climbs back above 380 and gets a close above 380 for whatever reason, maybe that's a trend change. So you're right, identify some kind of target that would prod you to put on some kind of re-ownership strategy.
Bill, I think I'd like you to do the same thing for me.
Well, I don't disagree with anything that Scott said there. I think that the real question that the producer has to ask himself, that the farmer has to ask himself, is what's your plan if you do see some kind of a rally in this market, if we do see some move higher, what levels would you like to get started making sales and new crop, referring to that? What levels, if we had a rally similar to what Scott was talking about there last, like we had last year, if we have a rally similar to that, what level would you like to have your sales targeted to at that point, and what's your plan to get to that point? I think that's really a key, because I believe that the market we're currently in, if we do see some upward movement, that it's probably going to be very short-lived, because we have a backup of inventory in the old crop and very low amount of sales made in the new crop, that whenever we see any kind of movement higher, we're going to see it get hit pretty hard with sales from the farmer, I think. So, you know, how do you take advantage of that? I guess that's really the question. And I think that Scott hit the nail on the head. I think you look at, you know, making the sales and what gives you the comfort level to get real aggressive on sales. You know, where would you like to buy some call options? Do you want to have some call options on prior to making the sales? That those kind of questions are what need to be answered. And every individual may be a little bit different, because in some cases the crop insurance may give a guy enough of a comfort level to be pretty aggressive on sales. In others, he may want to have some call options either on or plan to put on if he gets sales made. So that's really the process I think the farmer needs to be going through right now to be ready going into the growing season in case something does happen.
Dan, I've got a question that's related to this. Based on the 15% that would be left to price out or to cover in some way, oftentimes late May, June, July offer some of the best opportunities year in and year out. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Given what we know about this year, will those opportunities be as high as what you think could be the opportunities in late March, April timeframe?
I would say the better chances would be in the June, July timeframe, because that gets me far enough away from my cycle lows that I would think that we'd be in a period of strength at that time. I think, like I said, you know, I'm kind of in this window here. You could probably, like I said, April 1, give or take 20 days. So we're here. This is where I would be looking. You know, like I said, it's key here that we hold along this bottom end of this trading range and pull out of here. And if we get some good, decent technical action to pull out of here, and we may then get an end of the quarter fun short covering rally. So there is a shot in here, I think, during the next 10 or 15 days to have a rally. How much we get, you know, is going to be tricky. But, you know, when they come in and buy, there's a lot of buying all at one time. And that would be the only thing. I think the when you look at your seasonals, you know, 50% of your highs are made during June, July. And it even happened last year. It took all the way to July to scare up a weather scare, but it finally happened and you got your highs in July. So the odds favor that. I mean, having highs here in January and February are usually associated with coming down off of a short crop. You know, after you've had a short crop, you usually have, you know, you decline for at least a couple years. We had our short crop in 12. So you had early highs in 13 and 14. And, you know, now we're 4 years away from that. So the odds of having early highs here in January, March, I think, are pretty skinny. And, you know, like I said, statistically, there should be better pricing opportunities ahead. And my guess would be more of the June, July, August, September. I think it's going to be late strength, early weakness. I think weakness could be prolonged here as we go, you know, into April. That's about my big picture scenario based upon looking at my cycles.
Any other final word from you, Dan, before we close out for the day?
No, that's pretty much what I would say is kind of watch it in here. I don't know if there's any good answers to old crop corn. I know farmers are loaded up with basis contracts, and of course, if the market breaks, the basis is going to improve for the inventory that's not on basis contracts. That's not going to be very good for those that have a basis contract. But you can tell by the drop in open interest that we had a lot of those basis contracts priced out going into the end of February.
Dan Zwicker, of course, is from Waco, Texas. He'll be at the Beef House next week in Covington, Indiana. If it's still Friday and you're listening to this program, you can go online, willag.org, willag.org, and pick up your tickets. They're just $30. If it's during the day, 800-898-1065. Bill Mayer will be there, too. He's from Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. A final word from you, Bill.
Yeah, looking forward to being there next week, Todd. I think as you go into the growing season here, the worst thing that a farmer can do is just to be indecisive. It's a tough year margin-wise. We're looking at some negative numbers heading into the season. It's real easy to just get to the point where I don't want to really think about it and I don't want to make any decisions here. And even if you go through the process of making the decision that you don't want to sell anything at this point, that's okay. It's still just the fact that you've made a decision there that you don't want to sell anything right now. So I think be on guard to not just allow this time to go by. Put some dates out there. Say by May 15th, I want to reevaluate my plan and see where I'm at. July 4th, I want to do the same thing. I think that's a real key to producers this year, to kind of force yourself into going through the decision-making process.
And Scott Harms is with us, too. He's with Archer Financial Services, spends both time in Oakland, Illinois, on the farm, relatively speaking, in the grain elevator, and up in Chicago near the trading floor. A great two-perspective kind of view of the whole of the marketplace. Your final word, Scott?
Well, I think producers at these price levels, you know, can afford to be patient. I think there is going to be a better opportunity ahead, but I think it's important during these quiet, unemotional times, as they are, to identify those targets. You know, we're going to start scaling into some new crop hedges beginning at 395 and higher. I think it's important for producers to do the same thing, is sit down and, whether you're doing it, putting orders in your elevator or in the futures market, identify those targets now. If you are want to be aggressive and look at short-dated call options, volatilities are low, look at some out-of-the-money short-dated September call options to reopen that upside. So you're really legging into a minimum price contract to a degree. But I think these are the times, as Bill said, while we're quiet, make some decisions now and do some looking and out. You're going to get very busy in the coming weeks. It looks like we're maybe on to an early spring.
Our panelists today for Commodity Week have included Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.